1 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We'll talk a little KU hoops here in about 8 minutes or so and what Saturday tells us about them moving forward as we have now reached the month of March, Big 12 tournament a week or so away. And of course, March Madness Selection Sunday, just a couple Sundays away. We'll also talk a little bit about Canada. I was up there. That's why I was gone on Thursday and Friday. So a couple experiences from up there to run by you guys, including what would have happened if I would have worn the USA hoodie. And I think I was going to be just fine, as a matter of fact. Ultimately, it did not show up in time. So we'll talk about that, plus some of the food. I think you'll be proud of me for some of the food I tried as a picky eater. So,
I would like you to try other,
more,
I would say riskier foods,
and I did.
Maybe even.
I did.
Knowing that this experience went well.
So we'll get there. We'll get there. I had a good time up in Montreal. In Indianapolis, though, the combine wrapped up. I saw some of the headlines coming out of that, and some of them are predictable. We discussed Jeremiah Love a lot, and there was no way the combine really was going to go bad for him. I mean, it's perfect for him, and he delivered.
Although they did seem disappointed with his 4.36 40, which is a perfectly fine 40.
He wasn't the fastest running back. That was the kid out of Arkansas, Washington, or whatever, junior, who was really impressive and helped his draft stock. I just think, trying to balance what's overreaction, what really matters. You know, we had Bink on earlier talking about some of these guys, and did it change your opinion? I mean, Carnell Tate was quote unquote slow at the combine. And so everybody's trying to figure out, well, what does that tell you about him now? And I don't know where you had Carnell Tate. You thought he was the best receiver in the draft.
I like Mekhi Lemon better, but he apparently had a bad week of interviews.
Whatever it may be. I guess the 40 time, if you were already someone that loved Carnell Tate at 9 for the Chiefs, is the 40 time now you're just like, nope,
I'm out. I just think it's silly.
I think it's silly. I really do.
Yeah. Again, if you liked Boehner Tate, great week. If you didn't like him, this was just more ammunition he needed to say no thanks.
Yeah.
Like, I liked Bain fine. I would have been fine with him at 9. His arms being shorter is not going to completely deter me from 9, but because I was on the fence, it might be one more piece of information that says, if there's a different available player that I also like, maybe I'm just talked into them instead. Not completely off the board, not no chance, or I'd give it no entertainment, but maybe there is a sign that would prevent me or on the fringe. But if you were a hard yes or a hard no, the combine shouldn't really change much for you. Other than,
look how hard it was.
Carnell Tate ran slow.
He did.
And look, but all three wide receivers have the same issues. Carnell Tate's never been a one. He ran slow. Jordan Tyson's never been healthy. He's been a one and probably been the most productive and true, like, X-looking wide receiver Mike Evans type in the entire draft, but has never been healthy. And then Mekhi Lemon comes with a lot more unknowns, partially because in those Pac-12 schools at USC, you just don't really know what you're getting sometimes, and he's shorter. He's got some size issues that the other guys don't have. Although I was happy, I guess, Drew, this is the same thing. If you like Mekhi Lemon, which I do, and then you see that he wasn't Diego Pavying it, and he measured at 5'11", after saying he was 5'11", I'm like, okay, great. He is that height. There's a real risk, Gold, of like he's 5'9", 5'10". And that's the same thing with Tate. Maybe that's enough information to be like, if you were on the fence, not interested, or not interested at 9. I think we need to discuss the real possibility of trading down. I think that based on the amount of positions, wide and some of the ones that took a little bit of a hit, defensive line, wide receiver, like there is an argument for, could you pick at 14 or 15? You know, could you pick a little
depends
later?
On, I guess, how many first round grades you have. Like if you think you're not going to trade out of a spot to get what you consider quote unquote a first round grade, I guess, if you will, you know,
and they're at 9 where like some of the top players that look like they're going to be there, they're at positions that I would argue are not.
Oh yeah.
Really
safety,
the
linebacker, like
tight end, right tackle. Like you can get maybe the best at those positions, but is that, this is always the argument, right? Do you take best player available slash need? I think you can do both. I think it's best player available within three positions is kind of how I view it. If the Chiefs are just going to strictly go best player available, number one on their board, that position doesn't matter. Well, then Jeremiah Love would be heavily in play at 9, or the tackle, Fanu or whatever, if he makes it there, would be in play. I'm hoping that Love impressed so much of the combine that a team like the Saints or somebody else just says, screw it. and takes Love, and he's going to go higher than we think, guys. And Love just goes, you know, in the top seven or top eight of the draft. And then it takes it out of the Chiefs' hands completely. I do right now believe, as we, depending on a free agent signing at running back in the next week or two, we're going to continue to see a lot of noise through mock drafts and through insiders, because I think the Chiefs will be feeding them the information that the Love pick to nine, people are going to talk themselves into that.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to ask somebody, and like, maybe
I hope that's not the case.
Maybe we have Verderayam on later in the week, because you were in Montreal, so you might not have seen it. Mekhi Lemon had like a, so there's reports that he did bad in his one-on-one interviews.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But at the podium, he borderline had like an Adam Gase situation.
Did you see it?
Dude, it got,
just search Mekhi Lemon on Twitter and it'll pop up.
His demeanor and physical actions, it was very Adam Gase. Would you agree with that? He's looking around weird. He's moving weird.
He's staring somebody dead in the eye.
He's staring someone in the eye. It's just like just his looking. Demeanor came off weird.
Okay.
And I like, again, I like Mekhi Lemon. Yeah, dude. Like a snake in the grass or something. No, that'd be a good way to describe it.
That actually might be.
Like the way you were moving, looked like you were trying to do like a car.
Cartoon snake. Hold on.
Yeah. So he had kind of a weird.
Now,
kind of a weird.
It's funny. The take on that I saw, I'm just seeing Willie Colon, who was on with Good Morning Football today. He said, "That's the intensity I want to see on Sundays." So he's saying it's a good thing, even though, I mean, someone.
Because he's locked in?
Someone was like, "That's Jack Nicholson in The Shining," is how intense it was. Yeah, I have not seen this. This is bizarre. What the heck?
That was one of the things
he's
that
so
came
locked
up
in
on Friday.
Yeah, dude, he had kind of a weird moment.
What?
He had kind of a weird moment. So like,
did someone go back and look at college? Was he doing this in press conferences in college too?
I think it would have been.
I have
mentioned.
No idea.
I don't think so, man.
In terms of players,
maybe the lights were in his eyes. I don't know.
Okay, or he was trying to see. You're trying to try to see people.
That's the kind of thing you say if you. I'll say his combine. He didn't run, which anymore, mm-hmm. and Drew will agree with this. The combine has turned into, if you think your 40 time won't be fast enough, you don't run.
Now that's why, like, the average times are so good.
Yeah. If you don't think you're running a 4.44, you don't run.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, so he didn't run. He had this weird moment. There were some reports that he, quote, bombed some, like, team interviews. I'm like, boy, that got weird in a hurry for Lemon. So I don't know. He's got some size issues.
Yeah.
And then, of course, people, like, you know, grew in love with Kenyon Sadiq and Jeremiah Love.
I mean, yeah. He was ridiculous. So,
913-586-7965. Can I read you a text?
Yeah.
Quote from the 913. "You guys literally just said you hope another team drafts Love because he did so well in the combine. You have to be kidding me. You guys have no freaking clue. I don't know why I listen to you." Well, thank you for listening, sir. Number one.
If I don't want them to take him, why would I want somebody
else to take
him?
One, I feel like we've answered this about 100 times. Two, respectfully, you clearly don't know how to listen, because we've explained it about 100 times. Number one, the Chiefs, as in the Chiefs who are taking them at a player at nine, not the Browns, not the Saints, not the Chiefs. Number one, positional value. In Andy Reid's system, I do not think the Chiefs will get the full use out of Jeremiah Love the way another team will. Number two, running back financial compensation. There are free agent running backs that will make less money than Jeremiah Love will, with completely unknown factor in the NFL. So I can go and get a player like a Breece Hall or a Kenneth Walker or an Algier or an Aaron Jones for less money than Jeremiah Love at nine. Jeremiah Love at nine has to be a top three, top four back in football. I think that's unlikely to happen. So you can disagree with the logic, but acting as if we haven't explained it, I mean, this has been pretty clear for a while. But anyway.
Yeah, it's more about, and you and I, this is the thing. Jeremiah Love.
Thanks for listening to the show, though.
Jeremiah Love is, in my opinion, as good of a running back prospect as Ashton Jeanty was last year. And when we were briefly on this show joking about Ashton Jeanty, if he were available at 31, I'd be like, yeah, sure, because we knew he wouldn't be available then. It's just pick value versus pick price. And the Chiefs' current roster situation versus what it was even just a year ago. I will say, the thing that tempts me about Love or Sadiq in these non-valuable, typically, positions or lower outage, because if Kenyon Sadiq works at number nine, He's like an 850-yard wide receiver every year. Dead serious. And it's like, well, nine, that's just not like enough for me. It's an excellent tight end. It's one of the best tight ends in the league. But at nine, I want Patrick Mahomes, if I'm taking a weapon, I want Patrick Mahomes' key weapon for the next decade. And at running back, I can't be sure about that. And at tight end, it comes with a lower probability.
I just think in a different,
and
truly
that's
in
where
a different,
I run into an issue.
If Patrick
different draft, different year, different pick.
If Patrick Mahomes wasn't the quarterback and Andy Reid wasn't the head coach, and we were in, truly, like if we were in New Orleans or somewhere else, I think the answer is also different.
Yeah.
Like Andy Reid, like we all think he needs to adapt and go under center more or whatever. And whether or not they do that, we'll all find out. None of us know if they truly will. But they are never going to be an offense to me that is going to fully utilize the running back position to me the way you need to if you're taking one at nine.
I mean, they did it with Kareem Hunt, I would argue, in a single year. So like they have done it, but it's really been since then. So, and I do think that that's going back to when they took Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think they took him because they remembered that year when they, the year and whatever it was, five games, six games before Kareem Hunt got kicked off the team.
2018 or?
And the entire time that Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid have been together, the single best their offense has ever looked is when they had an elite running back and they used him well. They didn't use him like the way teams use Saquon Barkley and they got 400 carries. But they were a multi-tool weapon across the field being used in every way. And man, were they fun. Oh, the best version of any offense they've ever had. They also had prime Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. So pretending like just running back was the reason why is not that.
And they, we
and
all
sometimes
agree,
you can get a running back like that anywhere. They got Kareem Hunt in the third.
They, we all agree they need to be more explosive at running back. That's been the big thing. I think they can do that without spending the ninth overall pick. That's where we disagree. Like, I think they can do that in free agency. I think they could do a combination of free agency and a second or third round pick and get the job done without having to go to the ultimate extreme. The first top 10 pick the Chiefs have had in the Brett Veach era, I don't want them using on a running back. Just philosophically, that's all.
I guess part of this is...
We'll see. And this is... Like, Jeremiah, I don't even expect to be sitting here a year from now and being able to... I'm not going to be able to sit here a year from now and tell you that Jeremiah Love sucks. That's not my take. My take is not that I think he's going to stink and have a bad NFL career.
How often is it... I guess this is the other question I would ask. How often is it that the number one running back taken in any given class is the best running back out of that class? Let's take last year out of it, because it could still end up being Ashton Jeanty, but not enough evidence. I think 2 years is more than enough, because you find out. Is Jonathan Brooks the best running back out of the 2024 class? No, Bucky Irving is. He was taken in the sixth round. 2023. Yeah, Bijan Robinson's the best. Jahmyr Gibbs is a close second. Both guys taken in the first round. I'll make my argument, but I would tell you that there are some... Chase Brown was taken in the fifth. Chase Brown has been a very, very, very good running back, and he was taken in the fifth. Not as good as those two guys. Fine. In 2022, Breece Hall, maybe. Kenneth, but I would answer James Cook, who was taken in the seventh round, is probably the best, right? Okay, so now let's get to 2021, and then I'll stop this exercise. 2021, Najee Harris was the number one running back taken in the draft. He is not the best running back out of that class. The best running back is probably, is it ETN? No, Javonte Williams. That's just not a particularly
Someone's asking,
good class.
Would you use
Hubbard
the,
or Ramondre? Fourth rounders, third rounders. You can find good running backs everywhere. I don't want to take one at nine.
I'm not even going to that extent where it's just like, oh, you can just get a running back just as good. That's not even my argument. But like someone said, would you use the pick on Saquon or CMC? You're saying like rookie year, go back in time. I can get Saquon at 22 years old. Would I pick him at nine?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. But again, you 100%. Can't, I can't, you and I can't guarantee that. Right. So yes, if you could 1000% guarantee me that Jeremiah Love at nine is Christian McCaffrey or Bijan.
I'm in.
I think he's as good as those. I think he'll have a rookie season as good as those guys. And I think he's that good.
He has to have more than just one of them, though. That's the thing. For him to be those guys, he's got to do that for 4 years.
I mean, sure. I think that's the truth, though.
It can't just be 1 year.
I understand that, but I think the same is for Carnell Tate. If he comes out and he has 600 yards, at pick nine, he's got to get to 1,000 eventually.
But Ashton Jeanty, they thought they were going to be that, right? I'm sure when the Panthers took Jonathan...
The pick nine, if you're going to take Jeremiah Love, you have to know that he's going to help Patrick Mahomes. I think that's why you take Jeremiah Love or you take Kenyon Sadiq, because that ultimately is the whole thing. Why are you taking a wide receiver? It's to help Patrick Mahomes. I think you can argue the same thing for Sadiq at 9. You could argue the same thing for Jeremiah Love at 9. Any of those three players
have to have an impact.
Have
sure,
to have I just that think impact value, right away. And I think Jeremiah Love is the most likely to have that immediate impact, at least fair. Right away.
He could be. I would still go. It's the financial end. We know for crying out loud that Alec Pierce might get an $80 million contract. That's a wide receiver. It is way more valuable if I nail the wide receiver pick at 9 than it is running
from
back. It's just, I'm looking, it's not just about drafting a player for 2026. It's the long-term 26 through 2030 aspect of it.
It's easy to mention, and I don't blame people for doing it. It's easy to mention CMC or Saquon Barkley or Bijan or Jahmyr Gibbs. These are four guys all taken in the top 10 in the last few years that have really worked out. Do you know who was taken in the? Do you remember who was taken in the first round before Christian McCaffrey? What if they're that? Would you take it? Do you remember the running back?
No.
Leonard Fournette. Would you take? And he had a perfectly fine career, but would you? But at number 9, if I guaranteed you Jeremiah Love was Leonard Fournette, would you take it?
Yeah, but is that the style of him? That doesn't matter.
I'm just saying, quality of back. Fine.
I think it does because
he's Ashton Jeanty.
Because
I'll give you last year's.
He's only had 1 year.
I think Leonard Fournette, in terms of comparison, Leonard Fournette is more of Ashton Jeanty than he is Jeremiah Love. I think Jeremiah Love is more of Jahmyr Gibbs. He's more Saquon. He's more particularly CMC, Alvin Kamara. That's why I think people are mocking him to the Saints because
he does play a lot like Kamara.
Alvin Kamara. I think that's the plus. Just knowing in terms of like the shotguns, I know that we talked about it a little bit earlier, but Tyler Allgeier, if they bring Tyler Allgeier in, they have to run under center more because he's not the style of back at all that plays out of shotgun. They run more shotgun. Jeremiah Love fits what they do from that capacity that I think makes it alleviates the pressure a little bit more on Patrick Mahomes when you have that playmaker at running back. I think that's also the big thing is you can get Emmett Johnson or Jonah Coleman, really solid running backs, but are they a playmaker where they will literally, they can take it to the house on any sort of play. That's the type of guy that Jeremiah Love is, at least it seems like. And that's the player I would want to have because it helps out the wide receivers. Yeah. It helps out Mahomes. The O-line doesn't have as much, the O-line doesn't have to know that nobody believes in the run game at all.
What's funny, Drew, is like you're having a conversation like we disagree and we don't in what you're saying. This applies to each of the positions that we already mentioned. Tight end, safety, and running back.
Yeah.
If you guarantee me Jeremiah Love is Bijan Robinson, I'll take him. If you guarantee me Kenyon Sadiq is Trey McBride, I'm in. You want to tell me Caleb Downs is Kyle Hamilton? Sold. Like if you want to get, but like the odds of getting those players, even at 9, are low.
They're more likely than Carnell Tate being the guy that you want, though. In my opinion, they're more likely than any wide receiver you can take at 9.
But the drop...
I don't disagree.
But there's a floor part of this, too. The drop-off part of this, as if Carnell Tate is T. Higgins, like you mentioned, and I just get like a good NFL wide receiver, that's more valuable to me than if I just get a good NFL running back. If I get Cole Kmet at 9, or I get average NFL running back at 9, if I get average NFL wide receiver, I get way more out of it, way more than if those guys, if the similar drop off. If Carnell Tate, but I still could get, right? Let's say it's more likely I get Bijan Robinson with Jeremiah Love, it's more likely I get Brock Bowers at number 9, and I get those guys. It is also more likely that I get a league average solid wide receiver for Mahomes. The basement is far lower, so much lower. And at 9, it's like there's only so much risk I want to take. I just want like a good player. You know, like they got to be at least a good player.
See, but to me, if you want a good player, then I think Love and Sadiq are the pick over Carnell Tate. I would take those two guys over them in a heartbeat. I'd take Bane.
Positionally,
if we're talking just floor of being a good player, I would take all three of those guys.
Positionally, same thing. I haven't changed on that. Positionally, I want a defensive lineman. If we're just going off of, that is the more pressing need than anything. And I also, again, think they can just address free agency enough. Running back in free agency enough, whereas you're not really going to be able to do that all that much at the defensive line position, and the wide receiver market is kind of outrageous when Alec Pierce is going to get $80 million.
Somebody said Ashton Jeanty had a better year than I'm giving him credit for, did he?
I don't think it's fair to write him off yet.
I am not writing him off.
I don't think you should write Ashton Jeanty off.
He had like Isaiah Pacheco's rookie.
He had 975 on a terrible offensive line, a terrible offense, like a terrible football team.
Yeah. Look, he's a very good player. But like if... And lately, when you're taking a running back in the top 5, it has been working out for the most part for those teams. to your point, Drew, like I am more likely to have a successful, I will say this, a year one impact player, no doubt.
Oh,
almost,
yeah.
No doubt, right?
I mean, but yeah. If Love comes in and gives us 1,300 scrimmage yards and 10 touchdowns, well, yes, I would also love that.
In fairness, that's what no Jinty intended, had. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, I would love that. Go look at the carries. You think that the Chiefs offense, though, is going the way they operate that's going to be what that's going to be how they operate with Jordan, with I almost said Jordan Love, with Jeremiah Love.
I mean, to bring up
I think part I think part of the problem is you can say it's a scheme fit for Kansas City. Sure. I just know deep down Andy Reid can't help himself, and he's not going to give the workload to Jeremiah Love the way we all think he's going to.
But I think to Cody's point, because you brought this up, Cody, is that when they know they have a good one, they've used them.
Kareem Hunt.
Yeah,
the
problem with the 2018 example that Cody brought up.
They had other weapons. I brought that
up. Well, they had other weapons, but also the whole league has shifted. They were not playing two high safeties in 2018. You know how much Mahomes would love to go back to 2018 when everybody was making it easy on him?
Sure. Yeah.
And everybody shifted. The whole league shifted. That does not exist anymore. It was a combination of a lot of things that led to them having success in 2018.
Sure, but also like running backs matter more, so maybe they would use them more. I don't know. And look, it's tough. And I think a lot of Chiefs fans, here's the thing. And Alex and I said this before. It's not that I do not think Jeremiah Love's a good player. If they end up taking him at 9, I am going to disagree with the selection from a value of the position standpoint. That doesn't mean I'm going to be rooting against him. I hope he's I hope he's 1,300 all-purpose yards and 10 touchdowns. Of course I do. Mm-hmm. I hope he's Kareem Hunt in his rookie year. Absolutely. But Drew, and this is the other part I was talking about when it relates to the positional value at 9 and what you're talking about at running back. Drew, I am, more than any of the other position we've talked about, defensive tackle, defensive end, tackle, the odds of me finding a top 7 back in the NFL, the way let's say Jinty's a top 10 back. Let's just give him that. He's the 10th best running back in the NFL. The odds of me finding the 10th best running back in the NFL outside of pick 9, I can throw a dart. I can point to one in every draft in the last 15 years and find you a top 10 running back actively in the NFL that was not selected in the first round, that was second round or later. I can find them everywhere. And I'm not saying 7th round. That's where you and I got in this argument over. Not you and I, you and the fans, where I got tired of them taking Pacheco and then taking Breshard Smith, and then I had to listen to fans tell me that Breshard Smith was going to be the goods. And I'm like, he's a 7th-round pick. You can't just keep taking him in the 7th round and hope. You have to put some kind of asset into it. I just don't think it has to be asset pick 9.
That's my only
argument. I just don't want it at 9. If they were picking at 21 gold, I'd be praying Jeremiah Love fell to them. That's just the difference in like.
I still
value.
Think what then happens.
I would take a defender then. This is just. I would just sure.
Yes,
but I think
that's been for two months.
But as we're having the conversation
about weapons,
If we're having the conversation about weapons, like you can Davante Adams, 2nd round pick, T against 2nd round pick, Amon-Ra St. Brown. I don't think he was a 1st round pick. Puka Nacua was a 4th round pick. Like
5th round.
I think you in terms of like dart throws, like you can do the same thing with wide receiver. I think in some way, shape, or form, except for the top elite guys. Which is where I think Jeremiah Love falls into that, where if you could say a top 5 running back, you're not getting the likelihood that you get a top 5 running back, and even the 2nd round or later, is not nearly as high as you would getting a wide receiver to be that, just based on what we've seen, Saquon, CMC, Jahmyr Gibbs, those sort of guys compared to the Pukas.
I have to think about it. JSN was a 1st round pick. He's one of the top. Puka was a 5th. Pickens was a 2nd. Jamar Chase was a top 10 pick.
Correct. Yeah, top 5 pick. Justin Jefferson was a 1st round pick.
It's probably more like, I think it's probably the same. I'll give you the same as running back.
I just think because if we, right. Obviously, I think we all agree for sure that they should just take a defense, like they should take rusher or they should even take Caleb Downs. Like if he's there, take him.
There is a part of me, and I've said this before, there's a huge part of me still that is intrigued though by the idea that for the long-term health of this team, I understand they have to replace Chris Jones. But with Patrick Mahomes and the offensive line and all this other stuff, I want Patrick Mahomes' #1 weapon for the foreseeable future. I don't want to have to, like, the way they were doing with the offensive line. I want to keep guessing on that. Finding ancillary pieces around him are easier. The problem with running back is, even if he's the #1, for how long? Like, I watched, you know, like, Todd Gurley be the #1 weapon for the Rams for 4 years, and then he wasn't in the league anymore at 27. There's a longevity part that concerns me, too, at running back, Drew, in fairness. That even if they are a star, maybe the guys are lasting longer. I don't know. But nobody, I'll tell you this much. He's not built like Saquon, right? He's not built like Derrick Henry, so I don't think he can just like take an NFL beating for a decade.
That's also why you got the dual threat. That's why also why you have the duo. You know, it's not you're not just asking Jeremiah Love to do everything. It's bringing in that the Tyler Allgeier or whoever it is.
Super interesting year for the draft. As a reminder, Alex and I will be there in Pittsburgh for Thursday and Friday night of the NFL draft. Don't know exactly what that'll look like yet, but we will be there. Bringing you coverage right here on 96.5 The Fan.
All right, up next, let's get a little what's trending, get you caught up on a trade that happened today and whether you would make it for this running back if the Chiefs could have, if they were even interested in a running back that is now a member of the Houston Texans. Talk a little bit about the trip up to Canada and on Kansas's weekend against Arizona.
What's trending?
Cheddar, mozzarella, Havarti.
Number one on what's trending, the Texans have acquired Lions running back David Montgomery. So the veteran heads over to Houston from Detroit. There were rumors over the weekend that this was going to happen. The exact compensation, the Lions got a nice haul, I would say, for a 29-year-old running back, or soon to be 29-year-old running back. Fourth-round pick, an offensive lineman named Juice Scruggs, and a seventh-round pick. The Texans desperately need a run game. Woody Marks came on in the middle of the year. But that was it. Joe Mixon was a bust of signing. That was a disaster for them past year. Never played. Damian Pierce is now in Kansas City. So Woody Marks and David Montgomery will be the backfield there for the Texans. The Lions still have Jahmyr Gibbs. And I guess...
Whoever. It'll be... official prediction is Isaiah Pacheco, by the way, for what it's worth. Similar, like, the style nature actually makes a lot of sense, Drew. And if they just say, well, he doesn't have to stay healthy all the time, we got Jahmyr Gibbs. I also think Jahmyr Gibbs will just get a larger workload. Next up on What's Trending, the Chiefs have informed Jawan Taylor that he will be cut before the league year if a trade cannot be done. I still think there's a chance, a small chance, that a sixth or a seventh round pick could be done. There's a lot of teams still looking for tackle help in the NFL. We'll see if that means if the Chiefs are more interested in tackle in the draft. The Commanders have also informed cornerback Marshon Lattimore he will be released before the year league begins next year as well. That's expected to save them $18.5 million against the cap. He'd been expected since Lattimore suffered a season-ending injury in November. Now, there are plenty of teams looking for corners, so maybe Marshon Lattimore, another one. But he's coming off a torn ACL at 29 years old. He's expected to be cut by the Washington Commanders.
Elsewhere, we take a look at college basketball. We're going to talk about it in a second, but Kansas lost 84-61 over the weekend to Arizona. Missouri got a win against Mississippi State, 88-64. The Kansas State Wildcats fell to TCU, 77-68. There's a big-time game in the Big 12 tonight, Big Monday. Top 5 Iowa State against top 5 Arizona could shift the Big 12 standings a little bit.
Yeah, I would say so. And obviously, K-State and MU play later in the week. So we'll see. But good win for Missouri, by the way. It's not Mississippi State's no good, but at least good that you got it. Next up on what Trinity Sporting Kansas City opened up their season with a 2-2 draw against Columbus. So, obviously a good result, honestly, for Sporting, considering what kind of season they're expected to have. Casey Current will open up their season, what, in a month? When's their opener?
Later this month, right?
Later or am this I off month, on right? That? No, I think it's right. I'm still confused that it's March.
Yeah. And March 14th.
Oh, 2 weeks. Less than 2 weeks, 12 days.
Yeah.
So they'll open up theirs against Utah Royals FC. That's the team they took over.
Yeah, that's true.
As you remember.
Old ownership group.
Yep. And then they helped the NWSL grow, and then obviously a couple of those teams came back. I'm really looking forward to it. I haven't been down yet. The Bridgeport area is supposed to open here very soon, and then the bridge area, right, with like that, all that, I can't remember what the name of it's called.
Rock.
The Rockport Bridge Project. It's supposed to be open, and then all that stuff that's getting grown down the riverfront. I'm really excited to visit some of that.
Rock Island.
Want to go check out the new...
Rock Island, yeah.
I want to go check out the new amphitheater and stuff, you know? Maybe
more an amphitheater opens up this summer. Lastly, on what's trending, Paramount confirming it's going to combine its streaming platform Paramount Plus with HBO Max. And so the new platform will hold CBS Sports and TNT Sports properties on one platform, so... Again, I think every 6 months we get a change. These platforms merge together and they rename it from Max to HBO, Max to HBO, and then Paramount Plus decides to merge and it's hard to keep up. And I don't know what it means if you already have both. They just drop you from one of them. I have no idea how that works. Dusty was asking us earlier today. I have no idea how it works. All I know is Paramount Plus and HBO Max are combining at some point in the future.
The hell is that? I mean,
didn't that already happen before?
Well, I don't have Paramount.
Yes, because they can't make up their minds.
It was Max, then it became HBO Max only, and now what is it? Yeah. What the heck?
Does that mean I'll just get Paramount for free? Probably not, huh?
For people who have paid for both, they should give you some sort of a deal, at least for like the first 3 months. Where
I don't pay for both. I don't have Paramount. You don't have to get HBO.
Upgraded.
Is there anything on Paramount worth watching? I never watched any of the like Yellowstone stuff. Yeah. Never seen it. Have you seen
that? You're able to get any of the replays, I guess, of any. Like, I've got it, or I share an account with my sister and brother, or family does, and you can watch any season of any CBS show, essentially.
On Paramount Plus?
Yeah. Plus, you get the EFL Championship, too, on there.
What CBS
nice.
Shows do I watch, though, you know? Like, if you watch UFC, I get it.
You don't watch FBI, Tracker, Survivor,
no,
Amazing Race?
Never seen any of those. Never
NCIS.
Seen... I'm looking up a list now. Never seen Landman or Tulsa King. Or the ones I, you know, or, yeah, no. I don't feel like I'd like, I will say, I don't like cheesy cop procedurals. Don't really do anything for me. Like the FBI, CSI, NCIS, you know, like whatever, that guy puts on his sunglasses and he goes, yeah! And then he goes, rare guitar riff stuff on network
CSI.
TV.
CSI.
Doesn't do anything for me. It's just like a TV concept.
The Who? You don't like
it.
The Who? The
I just meant like the whole scene setup, not, you know, not the whole thing. So that's all. Doesn't really do anything for me. That's all.
Someone
I've never seen a single episode of Survivor.
Someone said Cody, Beavis and Butthead on Paramount, right up your alley.
Watched that when I was a kid.
I think they've remade it, haven't they? Haven't they reworked it?
Yeah. Yeah. And then they had like a new season of Dexter, I think, too. I watched the original series, so maybe I'd like, is the new one any good?
I don't know.
I don't have Paramount Plus, so I wasn't going to like
I don't
go
have
through
Paramount
the trouble
Plus
to go
either.
Find it, you know?
I do have HBO Max.
What are you watching? You know, what are you watching these days?
What did I watch most recently? I was going through the Oscar nominations. One of the movies was on there. I can't remember which one.
Okay.
Because I've told you I watched Sinners. Was Sinners on there?
No, it was HBO. Yeah, Sinners was
HBO. Yeah, there you go, Sinners.
I've been really trying to look at my phone less, like everyone does, right? You go through these cycles, you're like, I gotta look at my phone less. But also, like, I should watch TV less. So I spent this entire week listening to an audiobook when I was doing stuff at the house rather than just, like,
did you get through the
background
whole thing?
TV. I got 4 hours left of a 16-hour audiobook, and I started on Thursday.
Man.
So I'd say that's pretty good progress. Started on Thursday. Now, I listen to it when I drive, too, right? I listen to it on my way in from work today, or my way into work today. And I did a little bit of driving this week, and that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's for the new movie that's coming out, Project Hail Mary. That's the one I'm reading.
Oh, Ryan Gosling.
I think you'll be proud of me for those of you that give me a hard time on the text line about my picky eating habits. So I was in Montreal. That's why I was gone on Thursday and Friday. Thanks to Bink for filling in. And I had, I guess two items I had never had food-wise before, but one definitely a little more adventurous. So was there one of the nights, the menu, one of the dishes included, it was like a pre-selected menu. This was not, I would not have ordered it, admittedly. So I was kind of like, I'll try it. I had venison, Cody, for the first time. It was actually pretty damn good. So in Montreal, it was like very thinly sliced venison, like four little slices, like one of the courses. Have you had venison?
I have once or maybe twice.
Like, look, am I going to go on my way to order it ever? No.
So anytime.
But normally I would have said no, but I was in Montreal and I said, you know, basically F it. And so I did that. And that was, for me, that is actually going out there eating wise. And then once the best food I had the entire time, like poutine, it's okay. But soup dumplings.
They're awesome.
I did not think I'd have to go to Montreal, Canada to find the best like Chinese item I've had in forever at a restaurant, and soup dumplings were absolutely incredible.
I'm
like, you would have loved them. They're right there, freshly made. They were in Chinatown. It was so good.
So the only time I ever had venison is like your friend, you know, your friend growing up, dad who hunted and then,
sure,
you know, eat it that way. So I've had our venison jerky. Like I've had a few times over the years.
So this was like very tender, thinly sliced.
Bit gamey, but you're having
wasn't gamey
the way I had it was, right?
Yeah.
This should look. A soup dumpling, admittedly, is a very, 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 like you're applauding yourself, but it's a very low risk.
The venison is the one I'm saying.
Oh yeah, that one.
The soup dumpling, I'm just saying, was the best item I ate. Yeah.
But you try two new foods.
I do.
Try more new foods.
Yeah.
You might find new foods you like, and we always give you a hard time. I'm not sure Drew's a very adventurous eater either. He should probably step out of, he's 30 now. He's trying to, you know, like he's obviously it's in, you know, he's thinking about it more. You should explore more. Try new drinks. Try new food.
If I
try new things.
So if I go on like vacation, I'm more likely to try new food.
I hear you.
Like when we go to the Outer Banks, like I have shark, I have mahi, I have
okay.
I have shrimp, I have salmon, I have.
So you'll try any kind of
tilapia.
Seafood.
I have any kind of seafood, and I've
had
I don't
shark.
I think I've had venison at least knowingly, I suppose.
Yeah, I will say going to the Canadiens game on Thursday. Two takeaways. Number one, makes me want an NHL team that much more in Kansas City. It was awesome. And I know the Canadians are known to have one of the best atmospheres, but
yeah. So you went to the best of the best.
Correct. And I've gone to Vegas. So that's another great atmosphere. So I'm not seeing the random game in San Jose. Okay. You know, with the Sharks, shout out to the random San Jose Shark fan that's out there. I know one. So that was my takeaway with the environment, and the building is cool because of the history. The Bell Center holds 20,000. T-Mobile Center is nicer. It just doesn't have any character because there's no venue. There's no tenant.
But that's always been my argument. So, like, it would be one of the newest hockey arenas in the league.
Yeah, it would have been nicer.
Top 12.
And they've done some upgrades to Bell Center and stuff. And again, the history and stuff is very cool. The other takeaway, Cody, you guys were trying to talk me out of wearing a USA hoodie there.
Yeah, I thought you were going to get your ass kicked.
It did not show up on time. So if you're wondering, the photo I posted, I'm not wearing a USA hoodie. It's because it did not show up on time. I'm about to return it. It finally showed up at UPS a day after I arrived. So that was worthless. They were all super nice next to me, Cody. They would not have said a damn thing about it.
You think so?
Yeah.
That's because you were sitting with the bougie crowd, weren't you? You're in that club level. Everyone's nice in club level. That's what's going on here.
I was in club level.
You were with the people.
I was in club level, but I wasn't. Like, you're acting like I was in a. There was not even a damn cup holder, okay? I mean, it's not like that bougie. Come on. There was no cup holders or anything. That was annoying. I don't know. I couldn't understand why. I had a Molson beer. Why not? I hadn't had beer in 3 months.
I'm not kidding. Binkley said, what kind of beer do you think he's drinking? I said, Molson.
Good call, Cody.
He was.
Is he that Labatt Blue?
Yeah.
They're big Heineken fans up there too. I thought was interesting. No, I've told you I've tried to cut out beer. I'm still drinking alcohol, but I don't drink beer anymore as much. And that was the first beer I had in a while. And I said, whatever. The other thing I thought was just cool is it was you can get by speaking English there because I survived. But the fact that everybody was speaking French, I don't know, it was like the coolest thing to me. I enjoyed just being around that whole atmosphere. Everybody was speaking French. It's such a cool language. I was walking downtown. There were people with grocery bags and just baguettes hanging out of the grocery bags. I was like, it was just very cool. Montreal is a great, like, culturally cool city. I went to this basilica that was a block from the hotel from like the 1600s, I think it would have been, right? 1600? I think I got that right. Maybe I'm a little off. Anyway, did you see the photo? Like the detail was absolutely ridiculous with the Notre Dame Basilica.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to be religious. Like, I'm not Catholic or anything. So like, but the venue,
Jewish people who are Catholic? Is that?
No, it's not possible. It's not possible.
Is that?
But,
well, you could be ethnically Jewish and Catholic, I guess.
Fine.
It's possible. Yeah. I'm not saying it's likely.
But anyway, point being is like, so you go in there and it was the architecture was
incredible.
Unbelievable. Yeah, cool. So I did that. And then we did a couple private tour stuff of, I didn't know the world headquarters for Cirque du Soleil was there, which was cool to see.
Have you ever been to a Cirque du Soleil show?
Now I have to go.
They're fun, yeah.
That was the thing. Cause they were talking about it and they did this, like they had the showing of stuff, but I was like, I need to see it. And then, the 1976 Olympics were in Montreal. It's the 50th anniversary. So the whole, Olympic village, they had a whole tour and everything over there.
You said they were trying to open it, which is cool because
they're putting like a ton of money into it now.
The only time I see these Olympic villages is like Rio, and it just looks like it's desolate. Looks like a ghost town. I kind of hate, this is the one thing we've talked about with the U.S., which is nice, is they don't have to build a new Arrowhead to host World Cup games. They don't have to build new soccer stadiums, new venues, new places. We can host an Olympics and still, for the most part, have a lot of the stuff and the infrastructure, which is nice, but I'm glad you had fun. I'm glad you tried new food.
Yeah, man, it was good. It was a good time. I would say in the summertime, probably a better time to go because there's a lot of outdoor festivals and markets and stuff that are obviously not going on in the wintertime. So, yeah. Someone says best city in the U.S. In the U.S. is Boston. Yeah, Boston's on a list. I do want to go to Boston. But, yeah, Montreal had a good mix of, like, old culture, but also there's some modern elements to the city as well. Like I didn't end up taking the subway. I didn't need to for where I was going, but they have a pretty good transit system there in Montreal. It was so weird. I was at the bar and there were people who were sitting next to us. And so I was like, yeah, we drove from New Jersey, and like just fathoming that was weird, but it's only a 5.5 hour drive from New Jersey to Montreal.
Yeah, you know, but that's the difference. Yeah. The U.S. is really big. That happens all the time. Yeah. If you haven't followed, like, people in Europe be like, well, you just drive it? And you're like, I'll just drive from this city to this city. You're like, not in this country. I mean, what, you kidding? 5 hours is a short, like, you talk about that, it's a short drive. That would get you all the way across the United Kingdom. You go from top to bottom, left
you
to right.
You get to a new country in some places.
Yes. Yeah. You'd cross the entire place in four hours.
5 hours from here won't even get me to Indianapolis, where I grew up. Yeah. It won't even get me to my parents' house.
In the U.S., we talk about 4 or 5 hours like that's a short drive. In different parts of the world, that is not the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, since it wasn't cold. Not much any colder than what we typically would have in winter here. Like, Saturday was 41 there. Yesterday was 15 degrees in Montreal. So, cold, yes, but not to the point where you're just like... unbearable. The issue was it snowed the day before we got there, so it was just a slushy mess walking around downtown for the most part there in Montreal. But
let's talk a little bit about what took place in the sports world over the weekend. Yeah. Your Jayhawks lost to Arizona.
I saw that.
In its own right, there's nothing wrong with it, right? Arizona's a great team. You were facing them on the road. They got their star player back. Yada, yada. Makes sense, right? Tracks. My thing is, if you go through the entirety now of the Kansas Jayhawks basketball schedule. They got a lot of very impressive wins. They have a singular, in my opinion, maybe two, impressive road wins. One against Texas Tech, when they still had JT Toppin, and one against, I'll give them North Carolina State, which I think is a perfectly solid road win. Not like the most impressive road win of all time, but a good quad two or whatever road win. End of list. I am starting, like... And this is the problem. Because they're not a consistent team, and because their star players play inconsistent, Darren Peterson was great on Saturday, and they still got their ass kicked. But because of their inconsistencies and this other stuff, is it going to be a short march for them? They can't play away from Allen Fieldhouse. All of their good wins are at Allen. That's just what it is. And the Big 12's tough.
Yeah, they beat Texas Tech on the road, but yes.
So losing to Iowa State, losing to Arizona on the road, those are bad losses. But sometimes they go there and they just get rolled. They get whipped. They don't just lose. They get crushed. I'm just starting to think that, like, maybe Allen's effect has been better than ever this year, and, like, they can't win on the road. That's what it's starting to feel like.
They're a different team when it's not Big Monday, when it's not Allen Fieldhouse. There's no doubt. I think a lot of it is also the Big 12, which we agree is the best conference in the country, and you go through, and even, you know, I think Iowa State lost at TCU randomly during the season as well. I think it's a fair question, though, moving forward for them. Can they play up to competition enough throughout the month of March? And they're gonna have to do that, of course. They want to get to where they want to get. My opinion on Kansas does not drastically change based off of what happened on Saturday. This has been the story all year. Bill Self even said it. Kelvin Sampson said it. They'll play up, they'll play down. You don't really know what you're gonna get.
That doesn't bode well for a March team.
I agree. No, I agree. That's
not
concerning.
Being able to put two games together in a row is like,
well, they have. That's just not on the road. They have.
And this will be neutral site.
Neutral site, yeah. And depending on their seating, they might have the favorable crowd. It's a question for sure. They'll wrap up here with a couple quote-unquote easier games, although will they slip up? It's a fair question. And then they get the Big 12 tournament. They have a chance still to get the double bye. It depends. Kind of need Iowa State to lose to Arizona tonight.
They've really just tempered down to that. They're a three at best. They're in the three conversation. I don't think they can get to two unless they win.
Right now they're a four. They can't get to a two. I think they're borderline locked into a three or four. I think they'd have to lose out to be a five seed. Mm-hmm. Like lose in their first game of the Big 12 tournament. And even then, they might still land in the four line. They got too many good wins. They got as many good wins as any team in the country. Mm-hmm. Like they've beaten five of the top 10, 15 teams in the
Every ranked team in the Big 12 they've beat.
Yeah, but they've also, like, this is why I think they can't play away from Allen. They've lost to West Virginia on the road, Cincinnati on the road. They, you know, like, the TCU one was a fight. That was the Allen. Like, they've just lost to, like, they leave Lawrence, Kansas, and they can't play. They seem like they just lose track of themselves. Darren Peterson, he got them, and this is the one thing about having a superstar. The game, Gold, was getting out of hand in a hurry. Arizona was the better team. They were getting their ass kicked. And then Darren Peterson went into like God mode for a little bit.
He really brought them back
He went into God mode. I know you didn't get to watch the game. You got to like box score it. He went into God mode for a little bit and he just started like rebounding, assisting, shooting, making everything. He got him within two. And then Arizona was a better team again. They went on like an 18-4 run or whatever it was.
I think what we saw was, I think what you saw with Arizona now fully healthy again, that Arizona team, that was a team that had the perfect record.
Best team in the country. Yep.
You know, when Kansas beat them on Big Monday, special crowd, and then there were, you know, that was a revenge type game for Arizona on top of it. And now Arizona's full strength and they're going to be a top seed in the tournament and a legitimate chance to be in the Final Four. I think, in fact, it almost be somewhat surprising if they don't make it to at least the Elite Eight, Arizona, that is. And there'll be a lot of people's pick to win the national title.
So, I think fairly so. When they're fully healthy, there are three or four teams that I think, like if you gave me the four teams at the top essentially and said, you can have them or the entirety of the NCAA field, I'll take the four. I'll take
Florida.
Florida, Michigan, Arizona, and Duke. And yeah, I don't need anyone else. I take those four, and you can have Casey
got hurt for Michigan, which is a tough blow for them.
Yeah, that might
probably would agree with that. I mean, the tournament's a crapshoot, but if I'm going to get all four of those and one of those four to win, it's hard to argue against
the tournament's going to be nuts.
I know we didn't spend a lot of time on it because it was an uninteresting game, but good for Missouri for at least avoiding the pitfall. Like their whole thing to like. Right now, they're projected 10 seed. Their whole thing about, they're a tournament team, I've already said that. But their whole, like, avoid Dayton, don't have to go to the first four, that nonsense. You don't get to lose to Mississippi State. You don't get to lose to the bad, jokey SEC teams the rest of the way. It wasn't even close. They handled their business easily. It wasn't a game in which they struggled or even, like, played down to their competition. They won it easily. It wasn't ever in question. Kudos. It wasn't, like, it was the kind of game where you had on for, like, 15 minutes. You're like, well, good here, you know. I don't need to see anything else. They're going to beat this.
Yeah, the Oklahomas, squad. The Mississippi States, those are games you just have to win, and you put yourself in hopefully a spot where in the SEC tournament, you don't even have to win a game to guarantee a spot. You're just trying to avoid going to Dayton. We've been saying that for a week or so. If they're the fact that they're a 10 seed on bracketology tells you they're still barely avoiding the first four, and so you want to make sure you don't slip up one more time.
I don't know how Lenardi still has Auburn in the
weird one.
In the field. It makes no sense. They're like 15-14.
Every year there's one and random.
It doesn't make any sense.
Was it that Syracuse team that was like 18?
Yes, and they ended up going to the Final Four.
Yes, they went to the Final Four.
That is a good point.
Whether you like it or not, they still value talent. They look at your roster and they say, Auburn has talent. They look at the roster and say, talent.
That was what Bruce Pearl's comment was about the Auburn team that's coached by his son.
Of course.
If we're picking the 68 best teams, the Miami of Ohio is not in, I will say, the conversation is kind of correct, but not with
biased thing said by anyone.
I was going to say, but not with the team that you're talking about is almost 500 in a conference that's not as good as it previously has been.
I didn't even pay attention to that. Like, Bruce Pearl saying something about his son's team, like, that's not even a statement worth acknowledging.
It was more about if Miami of Ohio is a tournament team or not. But people also coincided it with, your former team that your son now coaches is also on the bubble.
Is that one team still undefeated? The college?
They are scraping by
against teams that are under 500 in the MAC. I think that's the conversation of their net rating stinks. That if they don't win the tournament, are they actually in?
I don't think they can be. I don't think they can lose one game and get kicked out.
I think it's tough.
Like if they go 35-1, they're not in.
I just think the schedule is.
I don't care what your schedule is. Come on, 35-1 though. Come on.
Yeah,
we don't have to like overthink this.
They might get the last spot.
This goes back to college, man. In college sports, where winning matters the least. And what your jersey says matters the most.
That is the fair
point. But Miami, Ohio, normally the 16 seeds, we kind of know what conferences they come from. Miami, Ohio, maybe I'm way off. Miami, Ohio won't be the 16 seed.
The MAC traditionally is like the 13 or 14 range. So then to me,
they should, you know, now if they get in as an at-large, they will be playing in Dayton, Ohio as a 12 or 11 seed against, you know, a power four school, and then they'll probably lose and whatever.
If they lose in the conference in the MAC title game to Akron or whoever, then
I think they
should be able to get in over a 500 team.
Tomorrow on the show, we'll continue talking combine and draft. Someone that was at the combine, Matt McMullen from the Chiefs, going to call in. We'll get his perspective on what he saw and heard throughout this time out in Indianapolis. We'll also keep an eye on if the Royals make the Marte move official or not. We'll check in with Vern later in the week as well. Hope you guys have a good rest of your Monday. The Drive is up next.